onto the highway again. But he was still a country mile off understanding Trader.
Sooner we get moving, the better. Could be the family we chilled have friends or kin around here. They'll want a posse after us.
Amen to that.
There was no argument about whether they needed to place a watch during the night. Not even any discussion.
I find sleep comes hard these times. I'll take now up to the mid of night.
I'll go until 2.
2 through 4? Okay with you, Ryan?
Sure. I'll go until dawn.
Ryan slept fitfully. Usually, the first night after some tough times, such as a prolonged firefight, he dropped off without any trouble. Now, at the end of an odyssey that had taken them most of the way across the Deathlands, the feeling that had swept over him was of bone weariness. Despite that, he'd awakened 5 or 6 times, once going to the outhouse outside the back door to relieve himself. Abe was sitting in a deep brocade armchair, cradling his blaster. The little man was more than half asleep, but he jumped into startled life when he became aware of the shadowy figure of Ryan looming over him.
Holy shit!
Not asleep on guard, are you, Abe?
Oh, no, of course not. I'm just sitting and thinking a spell with my eyes closed.
Good job it was me and not Trader who caught you. He might have snapped a finger or two to remind you about duty. Remember?
Oh, of course I do. He could be a bastard when he wants to. He sometimes was and sometimes is.
Ryan perched on the arm of the sofa, sticking his 6-hour into his belt.
He's changed, hasn't he?
He's gotten older.
Yeah, I should have guessed that. But somehow he never seemed to change, year in and year out. Always the same. Like he was hacked from living granite.
Abe stood and walked to peer out from behind the curtains.
I guess that when we all lived together, it wasn't easy to spot changes in each other. Then you go away for a year or more and you see the way time's been treating him. Yeah, he's changed.
But from your perspective, he's still tough as ever?
Oh, right, Ryan, right. Wouldn't want to give you any other impression about that. He's harder than ever.
Harder?
Abe fumbled for a kerchief to blow his nose.
Yeah, I got a bastard cold. I sort of find a couple of changes. One is that his memory kind of comes and goes a bit. He keeps forgetting my name, and he gets confused about what's past and what's present, what's been real and what's not.
What's the second change, Abe?
Well, I think he... I don't know.
Go on.
Well, Trader was always cold and hard. I mean, that's the way we loved him, I guess. But he was never mean. He was never unfair. Since I met up with him again, I've seen once or twice the way he seems sometimes to... like violence and chilling for its own sake.
Abe quickly told the story of a young woman that Trader had butchered during their escape from a posse. Ryan listened in silence.
I suppose that his time alone might have changed him some, Abe. Now we all have to try and sort of shuffle down together. But it isn't the same as it was. It'll never be the same as it was.
Before going on watch, Ryan found himself slipping into a dream. It was pitch dark, the high-walled canyons of the Colorado Plateau. His nostrils caught the elusive scent of wood smoke far away, below and to the north, where he knew a narrow river trickled its slow way through the red rocks. There was a faint rustle of movement farther along the ledge where Ryan squatted and waited.
Hey, Brother Eagle.
The sound wasn't repeated. Without any change in his sensations, Ryan realized he now lay in soft, sun-warmed earth in a vast prairie of swelling corn. He knew instinctively that he was being hunted, but if he kept very still, then he might be safe. A baby rabbit limped trembling toward him, ears flattened along its skull, its eyes wide and staring. Each movement brought a tiny puff of orange dust from beneath its paws.
Dad! Where are you?
The voice was Dean's. Ryan wanted to reply to his son, stand and look for him, take him in his arms and keep him safe from the evil that was darkening around them. But if Ryan moved, a great eye would seize upon him, and he would be plucked from cowering safety to a hideous, rending death.
Ryan.
Ryan didn't move. Something touched him by the shoulder, and he thought it was the brush of honed brazen talons. The slight figure of the armorer was silhouetted against the side window.
Ryan! It's 4 o'clock. Nothing stirring out there. You all right?
Hey, JB. Yeah, I'm fine. I was locked into a bad dream. Thought I heard Dean calling for help.
I've been thinking about Mildred for the past few days. Especially at night. You think they're all right down there, Ryan? Safe?
Who knows, old friend. Trader wants to visit the ruins of Seattle. I just want to get on home. But, well, today's another day.
Yesterday was the last day for their rendezvous.
Mildred Wyeth peered at a handwritten calendar on the scrubbed wall of the kitchen. The doors were open in the ranch house, allowing a cooling breeze to find its way through the building. Cooling was relative. Outside, the baking New Mexico sun was at its apogee, and the old pre-dark thermometer, nailed to the shaded wall of the veranda, was registering 118 degrees. Doc Tanner was loudly asleep out on the porch, his cracked knee boots lying discarded by his bare feet, his gnarled hands folded across his stomach. Dean Cotter and Jack Lorne had gone hunting together just after dawn, looking for some small deer that the boy had spotted the previous evening in a narrow draw to the west of the spread. Christy sat at the table in the kitchen, fanning herself with a cloth.
I've been checking off the days as well. It'll be so good to get some news.
You don't feel anything, Christy?
You asked me that before, Mildred.
Sorry, but...
Christy smiled, brushing back a wisp of fiery hair from her pale forehead.
No, I'm the one should be saying sorry. No need to snap at you, we're all edgy.
You can't pick up vibrations over big distances. You told me that often enough.
According to my mother, it's impossible, unless you're a true seer. But I still sometimes get feelings from a good distance, but nothing of JB and Ryan.
At least we've had no real trouble since Jack picked up that splinter when he was replacing the broken fence.
Mildred poured herself a dipper of water from the galvanized bucket and sipped at it, pouring the last drops over her face, letting it run down her neck onto her breasts.
If he hadn't finally showed it to me, the stoop could easily have lost his arm.
The tiny splinter had worked its way down under the nail on the index finger of the teenager's right hand. Mildred had noticed the boy wince when he nearly dropped a plate, helping with the washing up, and had asked him what was wrong. Reluctantly, Jack rolled up the sleeve of his shirt, showing the swelling, bright crimson against his parchment skin, that ran from the back of the hand, over the wrist, past the elbow, up toward his shoulder. It looked like the aerial map of some red-etched river drainage system. Mildred had immediately lanced the infection, cutting deep through the nail to its root, using a pair of thin-bladed dressmaking scissors. Pus had spurted into her face as she pierced the core of the wound, some of it hissing on the hot top of the iron stove, filling the kitchen with its foul stench. During her medical training, she had once attended a bad car crash and had to work under cramped and dangerous conditions, with no anesthetic available to her and without proper surgical instruments. But there, both the injured had been deeply unconscious. Jack had been very much conscious. Christy had offered to try to use her Earth Mother skills to send him into a trance that would have taken him away from the worst of the pain, but he'd refused.
Lose control, and never know when get it back.
He chose to stand rather than sit at the table, laying his swollen hand flat on the grained pine. He closed his red eyes and took slow, deep breaths, the veins standing out on his forehead like whipcord. But he never made a sound, even during what Mildred knew had been the most vicious pain. She'd bandaged the finger, reassuring him with totally false confidence that he would be fine and that there was no risk of amputation. The teenager was a fast healer and didn't prove her wrong.
What do we do if they don't come back?
I figure that the chilling of Trader Ryan and JB would be big news and we'd get word eventually. They got a reputation, for better or worse, all through the Deathlands.
What's he like?
Trader?
Yeah.
Remember, I only knew Trader for a very short time. JB and Ryan rode with him for most of their adult lives. For better or worse.
Did you like him?
That's about the same as asking if you like a mountain or a river or the sky. Trader isn't a man you can compare with anyone else.
I get the picture of someone, like a sort of colossus from ancient myths, striding out across the land with that blaster of his.
His Armalite?
Yeah, sort of a person that you took care not to cross.